Okay, so some of you may have noticed I've dressed a little unusually tonight. There is a very good reason. It has to do with my introductory message. One of the things that I'm always saying about Fetishmen San Diego is we tend to attract two types of people, Boy Scouts and traffic cops. Boy Scouts, pretty obvious. Trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind. Not so clean, but reverent. Okay? Traffic cops. People who, by their nature, for whatever reason, maybe it's something in their past, maybe there are demons that drive them, but they take full responsibility for the safety, well-being, and success of the space, even if it's not their space. One of the questions I often ask is, if something suddenly goes haywire, let's say in this room, are you the sort of person who sits back and goes, oh dear, I wish somebody would do something, or are you the sort of person who makes a beeline towards it to handle it? The people who have that champion nature, as I call it, what I assert is that people who have that champion nature are what cause civilization to rise in the world. They're the ones that cause things to be stable. We attract a lot of guys like that to our group. That's why we don't ever have anything go wrong. Not because you guys are going around shaking your fists saying, you fuckers better be good, but as in you carry yourself with dignity and value and you're keeping an eye on things. You're being the ones who provide security. Okay? I'm wearing a security guard shirt, which is a guaranteed way to have the heterosexual security crew at any gay bar on earth to follow me around looking suspicious. What's he up to? What's he up to? But all the gay guys know. They all say, ooh, authority figure, nice, daddy, arrest me. And I always say, actually, I'm not an arresting officer. I'm a corrections officer. I'm here to check your punctuation and spelling. So, anyways, what I want to say about the folks who are going to be talking, I don't know them personally well, but what I have to say right now is that I admire them probably more than anybody else in our community, because these are the people who would put their ass on the line for you without even knowing you. These are people who would take a bullet, and I'm not exaggerating, these are people with big fucking hearts of lions that are going to put themselves in harm's way so that defenseless people cannot be victimized. These are people who go out of their way to make sure that they're loving us with information that we can use and to stay safe and healthy and vibrant and successful. These are the people who put themselves in between us and hazard. One of the rhetorical questions I always ask is, how many people here, raise your hand if anyone has ever treated you shabbily at any of our events, at which point no hands go up. The reason why that's so important to say is because it's not accidental. It's because of people like this. It's exactly because of people like this. I give the people like, you know, courageous champions full credit for why we never have anything go wrong. We've had over 500 Fetishmen San Diego sanctioned events in the last 37 months. Nothing goes wrong. Anything that starts being a problem, I'm licking my finger, I reach out, and I go, because the problem goes away before it becomes big. Because people who are deeply responsible people who go out of their way to keep other people safe, put their ass on the line to make sure that nothing goes haywire. And all that the general public sees is, my, this is a really nice, relaxing event. So having said that, what I want you guys to really do is listen clearly to these people. These people, it just doesn't get any better. I mean, if I say anything more, I'm just going to get all choked up. So thank you, and here we go. So let's hear it for Chris. Come on up, Chris.
All right, I'm all wired up.
Yes, you are.
All right. Yeah, I like being wired up. So anyway, a few months ago, somebody that I knew was sexually assaulted, and that brought back some memories from previous friends who had been sexually assaulted, one of which is a good friend of mine who, when he turned 18, some friends took him out and had a party, and they drugged him, and he doesn't remember anything until the next morning, and then he, a few months later, found out that he was HIV positive. So when I heard again and again and again people being sexually assaulted and abused out there, it just really hurt me, and I just got so sad that I wanted to do something this time around. So I started reaching out, and that's where I met Leah and Gabriel, who are going to talk to you in a few minutes. So this is very important, and it just I just want to get that message out there. So hopefully if you take something out of this, or if you can help somebody out of this, or something in the future, that would be great. I guess that's it for me, so I'll pass it on to Liat.
All right. This works? All right. Well, welcome, everybody. I have a slightly strange name. It's Liat. It's spelled with a T at the end. Just a couple words about myself. I've been involved in the BDSM community for probably only about 10 years actively. Of course, I'm sure all of us were kinky before that, so as was true for me. And I started off in Boston around 2003, 2004. And I got involved with the New England Leather Alliance over there and a group called the Network LaRed, which is an organization working to end abuse in the LGBT, kinky, and polyamorous communities there. And I started off volunteering on their hotline and helping out with support groups. And we had safe homes, and we had advocates who would help with court dates and all kinds of great things. And one of the big things that we started doing was a lot of prevention and education work. So we'd go out and we'd do workshops in the community. And one of the things that we started really talking about was the difference between SM and abuse. And it was a really important presentation that we would give, not just within our community, but also to service providers who were working with survivors, where folks might not feel free to say, I am kinky, I am a leather man. And these things were an issue, but providers didn't know how to address that or how to take it seriously. So we started doing education around that. I have since moved to San Diego a few years back, and I now work for an organization called Center for Community Solutions. We are the Rape Crisis Center in San Diego County, and we also do work around elder abuse and domestic violence. When I talk about domestic violence, we apply it to people of all genders, all orientations, so that includes partner abuse, it includes dating violence, all of it. Because we are the Rape Crisis Center in San Diego County, we also are hearing a lot about what's going on in the community. Not all of it is getting reported to us, and not all survivors are coming forward to us. And so one of the things that we want to be doing more of is engaging with our communities. So I have the privilege of being part of our prevention and education team. I'm the training specialist at CCS. And I actually do all the internal development for our staff and for our volunteers. I also go out and do presentations for community partners, such as Fetishman in San Diego. So it's really great for me to be able to go out and engage with communities. But I also do all the training internally. So recently what I've started doing, and this is new for CCS, is I brought in one of the presentations that we started at the network. And that's SM is not abuse. And so we started training our staff and our volunteers about the difference. And so now we're developing our own internal competency so that when survivors come forward, folks will be taken seriously and they'll get the services. That's not to say that folks were turned away before necessarily. It's just that now we're developing a stronger base of knowledge so that we can serve people. So I recently did one in May, and I'll continue to be doing those trainings internally. But I'm here today to kind of raise the issue around consent and sexual assault and start a conversation about it. How many of you all already heard about some of the stuff that's been happening in the community? Just raise your hands for me. It looks like most hands are up. So does anyone feel comfortable saying a little bit about what's been going on in your perspective? What's been happening? And I'll give, yes.
Being as connected as I am, being the network node that I am, I get a lot of gossip, I get a lot of tidbits, I get a lot of direct reports, I get a lot of stuff. We could talk about what's happened lately, but honestly, having been in the scene since 1977, I can tell you it's an ongoing process, an ongoing problem. It never, ever seems to go away. I have to deal with an awful lot of people saying, did you hear what just happened? And then I hear about it and I'm appalled. What happens is that there are people out there who, for lack of a better word, in my opinion, are sociopaths. And their pleasure is in violating people because it's a great amount of fun for them. They do exist. They're a lot more common than we like to admit. They like to operate under the cover of darkness. They like to do their dirty work and then get away scot-free with it. Like the example I'm always giving of, ha, ha, ha. Yes, he went into the hospital for 3 weeks, but at least he never figured out what my real name was. So, no harm, no foul. And that is how some people think. There are people in this room who have had direct experience with that. I'm not going to bring it up. I'm going to let them bring it up. But it's an ongoing process, an ongoing scourge upon our community that they bring a very bad name to the rest of us. The example I give constantly that I gave last week is the reason why this group exists, as all such groups have existed, is that we operate in the daylight, not under the cover of darkness. We are esteem-based, so that someone who's a stand-up guy gets more goodies, gets more friendship, gets more nookie, gets more referrals, gets more affection, gets more respect, versus somebody who thinks that we're creepy because we spend too much time together is secretly really afraid that the next time he shows up for an event, we're all going to turn around and point at him and say, that's the man, officer, arrest him, because we are responsible people, which is really what is broken down, is the lack of responsibility. There's someone in this room, naming no names, who was playing with a boyfriend, and 6 months after he started playing with them, he had difficulty peeing. So he went into the clinic. Not only did he find out that he had several sexually transmitted diseases, he was also HIV positive. When he brought it to his boyfriend's entire response was, ah, damn, I could always tell when I'm flaring or whatever the hell, you know, the hepatitis symptom, or not hepatitis, herpes symptom. And that was it. He had no regrets. He had no apologies. To me, that's a perfect example of a sociopath. They exist, and every fucking one of them is online. What we do is we go non-online. We go to places like this and have somebody come up to you and say, you know, there's somebody I'd like you to meet. I think you two would really play well together. And that's based upon esteem. That's based upon respect. That's based upon history. It's the exact opposite of what they're talking about tonight. So as far as what has actually happened, my problem is that since I get so many different versions of everything, I cannot state anything as a fact. All I can do is just notice when things happen. I have to stay fair. I have to be the judge. I have to be patient and impartial. So I cannot say specific things. Perhaps Leah will be able to do that for us. Thank you.
Well, I can't say specific things either. I'm bound by confidentiality, so I can't reveal anything that I know has, survivors coming forward. But I wanted to get a sense of, in the room, what you all think is happening in the community. Yes?
Well, I'll add on to that. I'll just try to speak loudly enough so you don't have to attach.
Walk up, please.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about today in the context of our niche of the community is important too, but it's wider than this room. It's wider than the BDSM community. There's an issue in San Diego with people getting drugged at bars.
Yeah.
It's not just with the S&M group. So you have to watch your friends at bars, you know, watch the drinks. You have to be careful because they don't know if it's like a serial rapist, if it's more than one person, but there are a consistent number of reports from multiple people. It's going on here in our town.
Thank you. Yeah. So we are seeing a lot more people coming forward all of a sudden. And it's because one person decided to come forward, right? So one person decided that he felt like he could speak up, whereas most people don't feel like they can. He remained anonymous. He had a piece published in SDGLN, and other people started coming forward because he did. and some stayed anonymous. And I think that that's a really important thing, is that folks are starting to talk about it. How many people think, though, that this was somehow new? No show of hands. Maybe some questions. This has been going on for a long time in the community. This is not new, right? This is stuff that's been happening. It's just that now people are talking about it. And so that's kind of why we want to expand the conversation today. So if you don't mind, very, very, very quickly, so I have a sense and so that you have a sense of who's in the room, if you haven't all met each other, please quickly just say your name for me. And if you don't feel comfortable, or whatever name you wish to give in this space, and remember that some of it may get picked up on this recording. So I just want to get a quick sense.
I'm Chris. For some of you, I'm Chris. Some of you may know me already. I know there's a few new people here, so I'm Chris.
Okay. Great.
Gabriel.
Will.
David.
Mike.
Rod.
John.
Bob.
Jonah.
Howdy.
Brian.
Stuart.
Jay.
Luigi.
Magnum.
Chuck.
I am Brett.
Brian.
Mark.
Reed.
Gary.
Vaughn.
Kurt.
Patrick.
Michael.
Donnie.
Kevin.
Mike.
Timothy.
Ryan.
Jorge.
Damien.
Me.
Thank you all so much. So that was the super fast version. I do appreciate it. I'm not going to remember your names. I'll just tell you right now. Your mind's written up there, so you have it. So let's start off by trying to define sexual assault, because that's really what we're talking about right now. So can anybody give me what you think is a definition, and I'll go ahead and write it up on the flip chart. And it's okay not to know for sure. Okay, so transmitting STDs knowingly, but not telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so thank you. Anybody else want to add to that definition?
Any act sexually that's unconsensual
consent. So any act sexually that has no consent. Thank you. And that's not a kink. Okay. We'll talk about that more in a second.
Not respecting limits.
So not respecting limits.
No doesn't mean no.
Okay. So no doesn't mean no. I heard something else, yes?
Unless
that's been negotiated. That's the caveat in this room. No, daddy, no, daddy, no, daddy. That's always fun play. yes?
I'd also say not asking about limits, so not knowing.
Okay. So not asking or knowing about those limits. Anyone else want to add to our understanding of sexual assault? Yes.
I think a more modern take on it that they're exploring now is these, you know, the videos of these girls that have been sexually molested in some context.
Mm-hmm.
They're discussing whether or not videotaping the action is another form of sexual assault.
So, yeah, taping it non-consensually, right? Because we can all agree to be taped, and that might be something we're really into. But if it's non-consensual, so videotaping. And I saw your hand as well.
Unwanted advances from somebody.
Unwanted advances. Thank you. Okay, slipping a Mickey. So. So roofies, right? Date rape drugs, GHB. Does anybody know what the most common drug that is used to facilitate a sexual assault?
Ecstasy.
opposed? Alcohol. Correct. Did anybody want to take a guess at what percentage of sexual assaults are facilitated by alcohol? 85, yeah. So right between the two of you. Correct. So yeah, we're talking about the vast majority of sexual assaults that are drug facilitated, and those are primarily alcohol. Right? Certainly there's other drugs that can be used though. Right? And I think in our community we may be seeing other ones more often, and I don't have a statistic on that. But I think what we're seeing in the club scene, and certainly, you know, folks, I mean, I know there's a big debate about whether poppers are drugs or not, but certainly anytime someone is intoxicated in any way, right, in any form with any drug, there's the potential for that to be intoxicated enough for it to be sexual assault.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is two drug officer ass people and one commits that, is it?
So if two drunk author ass people, right? So what do you think? Is it still sexual assault?
Yes.
It's not an excuse. It is still sexual assault. Okay? So it doesn't matter if the perpetrator, the person who is sexually assaulting another person, is drunk or high. If the victim, the person who endures the sexual assault, cannot consent because they are intoxicated, that is sexual assault. Right? And that's a really important thing to remember, because if we're going out to bars, to clubs, we're using at home, it can still be sexual assault, even if both parties or all parties, because it could be more than two, are engaging in some kind of use. Right? Thank you.
Poppers is a little... I think the question about poppers is because if you go out to a bar and you're going to drink alcohol, this is before the actual sexual event occurs.
Mm-hmm.
Poppers, I guess, is more traditionally introduced as the event is already occurring.
So let's delve into that a little more deeply, because we want to start to understand when consent is happening, right? Because you're starting to raise the question of, if I'm using in advance of the sexual act or the sexual assault,
right,
versus using when it's happening, does that mean that it changes it somehow?
Well,
does it?
I still think that, like, poppers are a drug because it's a mind-altering, you know, substance, mm-hmm, and by that nature it's a drug, but it's not a precursor. It's as it is occurring. So if somebody is introducing the poppers or asks for the poppers, that kind of implies a consent, because there's it's being brought to your face,
mm-hmm,
unless they're already drunk or hot.
So you're saying, I'm going to repeat it for the recording because I didn't come over there, so that because poppers are being introduced as part of the sexual play, that it implies consent because it's right there in your face and you're being asked if you want the drug.
Because you'll have to have it brought to your face if you're going to be the one inhaling it, but if you're not in a blackout state or something, you can say no.
Okay, so you could say no if you're not in a blackout state. So let me open it up to the group. What do you all think of what he's saying? Does it imply consent when somebody offers you a drug during the act, during the sex act?
I will.
Yes.
The issue is that the consent isn't just it's not one moment of an encounter.
Mm-hmm.
It can happen throughout an encounter, especially if what you're doing escalates to different activities, and you may have drawn out limits beforehand,
right,
and then you engage, and then, oh, you know, some alcohol or poppers is, okay, now maybe I'm loosening up on my limits, whatever, and so that's when it becomes a gray area. So I think introducing poppers mid-scene still can...
It's a consent for the poppers, not so much consent for the whole rest of,
okay,
the bank.
So consenting to take drugs or alcohol is something that people are doing anyway when they're at bars and clubs, aren't they? Right? People are drinking voluntarily. They go out, I'm going to have a few drinks. Does that mean they're consenting to be sexually assaulted?
No.
No. So do poppers mean that I'm consenting to be sexually assaulted?
No.
No. So just because somebody offers you a drug and you say, hell yeah, yeah, I'll take that drink, yeah, I'll take that hit, it does not mean that it's not still sexual assault if you then are violated after using it or while using it, okay? And that's a really important thing, and it doesn't matter if both parties are intoxicated, okay? Other questions or thoughts? Okay. Yes.
Yeah, I've been in situations where I've pulled my limits and got myself in a situation where it wasn't respected.
Mm-hmm.
I do take part of the blame for not pushing back and saying no. I said no several times, and then it's like, but then, you know, it happens anyway, and I'm kind of like, fuck, you know, and after the fact feel guilty, but then also, you know, in the back of my mind, that was hot, but I still had my limits, and they were violated, mm-hmm. and I think that it's partly my responsibility as well to actually make it very clear. And in that situation, I could have done that.
So I hear you saying, and I appreciate you sharing your own experience. That
confusing.
It is very confusing when you have negotiated limits and those are not respected. And you may say no several times, and the no is not negotiated as, right? Or you may say a safe word several times and still not have those limits respected. And it sounds like what you're saying is it was confusing because at some level it was hot, and at the same time it was not negotiated.
Right, and it went past my limits that I had set.
And it went past the limits that you had clearly set.
Yeah.
And I think that you're possibly not the only person in this room who has experienced that. So I see hands.
And that can happen too, especially in the kink fetish thing that we're into. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're all bound up and you can't move and you can't get away if the place catches on fire or strapped down to the sling or whatever it is, and even though you have the safe word and all this kind of stuff, when you're in, you know, hopefully you're not going to do it unless you really trust that person you're with. It's not a one-night stand type person. But, I mean, when you're bound and you can do the safe word all you want to and there's nothing you can really do about it and they force you, you know, stick something down your throat, a pill or something like that, and, you know, you can try to keep from swallowing as best you can. But so, yeah, you know, that kind of tends to go to the sexual assault and, you know, then kind of pushes toward the rape thing too, you know. And so you have to, you know, you have to be careful with it. I love bondage, but I won't let anybody do it to me unless I know who they are. You know, so you want to be careful. It's not a Friday night, Saturday night pickup.
Yeah.
You want to be very careful about that.
We're going to go into more depth, so thank you for bringing that up, about the complications that happen when we're playing and how consent works when you are bound and how it doesn't work and what we need to be mindful of, what we need to be careful of. I want to go back to this definition a little bit so we can clarify and have a common language for what we're talking about. You talked about something going from sexual assault to rape. In reality, rape is a form of sexual assault. It's one type of sexual assault. However, there are lots of other types of sexual assault. So can anybody tell me what else constitutes sexual assault?
Stalking
is not sexual assault. However, it is closely related because a lot of times the people who are stalking are preying on people in order to abuse or sexually assault them. Absolutely.
Verbal.
Verbally sexually assaulting someone, right? Yes.
When you've told somebody to stop touching you in certain places, stop coming on, and you've made your point and then continue doing that, I think that's actually bordering on at least, it's sexual assault. It's unwanted.
It is unwanted contact, right? If you've said no and someone continues to do it, it's unwanted. And I heard somebody else... There's sexual harassment, which is the preying on or like approaching someone that you don't want, you know, to be approached by. And then there's sexual assault when someone is actually in contact with your body in some way, right? And somebody else, yes?
Inappropriate touching.
What parts of the body might that include?
Any part.
However, primarily we are talking about genitals. We're talking about the ass. It can be for trans people. It can be their chest if they don't feel comfortable being touched on their chest. It can be thighs, if people have a problem with the thighs, and that's a sexual erogenous zone, it absolutely can be sexual assault. Any part of the body, okay? And certainly, any time that someone is touching, grabbing you, whether it's sexual or not, it's assault. Okay? Yes.
I have to raise an objection in that what you just said is very absolute. And speaking as somebody who, if I go into the Eagle, by the end of the evening, I come out of the place with the handprints of every man in the bar on me.
Yes.
Because I don't worry about it. I don't freak out. I don't say, assault! I just say, oh, by the way, you're only allowed to touch the parts that you love. And I'm not going to, melt into a puddle of goo just because somebody touched my ass. To me, it's just a way of saying howdy and I think you're cute. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that as assault whatsoever.
All right. So let's go in depth in this. Yes, I see your hand.
Well, to piggyback off what Papa Tony said, he goes in the Eagle and he's going to get that. And it's kind of, he's in the headspace. And he might be in the headspace 24/7. But, another person may not be in that headspace. I mean, for me, throughout my history, I've gone to, numbers on a bare night. This was before I was really part of the fetish community. And on some nights, I didn't want to be touched by somebody, anybody, unless I knew you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would definitely bat their hand away or grab them by the wrist and say no, and that would be the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But another time, I might just welcome that attention. It just definitely depended on my headspace, whether or not I was accepting or not. And but if I go into the Eagle now, it's part of the erotic atmosphere. But if I'm at the park or something, I'm going to be a little more.
So, context matters for people.
It's definitely.
Context matters for people. When we talk about the legal definition versus our own personal understanding of it, there may be some differences. And for any individual, you may have an experience that even though you didn't necessarily say, yes, touch me here, it may still have been welcome or appreciated, right? And we indicate those things in different ways. We're going to talk more about how to define consent in a moment. But when we talk about sexual assault, there are legal definitions. And we should all be aware of those definitions so that we know what it means. I saw your hand. Somebody over here. Yeah.
So, I'm really new to the gay male community, right? And I went to Numbers, bare night. And, I had no idea that it's in the gay male culture to just put your hands on somebody else's body and grab people and just make out with people. And to me, while that may be good, I never consented to any of that. People, put their hands on my body and try to kiss me. That is absolutely without consent. And I'm sure, I've been to the Eagle a couple times. And you know what I mean? I have at no point given consent for anybody else to put their hands on my body. So going to what Papa Tony said, I disagree. While you may enjoy something like that, it's automatically assuming somebody else has given you consent over their body. You know what I mean? I want to respect the people that I'm around, and I get that that's the culture and everything, but you know what I mean? I guess that's something I'm going to have to get used to, but I'm just not used to people just straight up, walking into Bear Night and people grabbing your who knows what. You know what I mean? So.
Your junk, yeah.
Well, okay.
So I see hands.
Shake bears hug. So if you don't want a bear to hug you, you'll have to just push back. But all bears
right,
hug.
But the thing is, I get hugging, and that's a cultural thing, and I get that. But at the same time, you're basically just telling me that it's just normal for people to just grab my junk and stuff. You know what I mean? But what if I say junk, I mean my butt.
No,
you know what I mean? That's a cultural thing.
That's
and
you
so,
have to tell them no.
And I don't come from the straight community either.
You have to make yourself good. You've walked into kind of a sexually charged atmosphere.
But I've walked into a non-sexually charged atmosphere and the same thing is happening.
That's a good thing, but if you're
feeling okay, so for the purposes of getting this all on the recording, I can't jump around the room, so I'm going to try to repeat some of what was said. Yes, this is a club or a bar night might be sexually charged for some people. It might not for others. People might be going to dance with their friends. That's not an implication or an implied consent to be sexually assaulted. And we still know that sexual assault may be different for different people based on what is your own set of limits, right? What is a part of your body that feels like it's sexual and what part isn't? I see other hands. I saw you all here. And I'll come
back. I feel like, that's how I feel, though. Like, this is why, like, I go up and I pat their ass, or that's how I say hello. Mm-hmm. And, like, when I'm traveling, when I go to a vanilla bar, I'll go up and I'll slap a guy's ass. But he knows exactly what I want when I do that, and we go home.
Okay. So it's a message that some people will understand.
Absolutely.
However, not everybody may understand that message.
I've never had a negative reaction.
You may not have had a negative reaction up until now. That is true. I saw your hand.
I dress very suggestively, and I'm very flirty, and I'm very comfortable with myself. And I go out, and I'm starting to explore more and more the fetish. But I've learned that if, like, somebody said to me one day, well, you're like a girl with a short skirt. And I'm like, that's bull crap. I can see you, like, who's coming. And it's my decision to let that person, however I let him touch me or not. And if I don't like somebody or I don't like the intention, because we can feel things, I will push them away. And if they insist, then you take it to the next level. But I think addressing to what he was saying, it's a personal boundary that you can set your own limits and say no. Mm-hmm. And, so, then like if that insists, then you figure something else out.
So I appreciate that you feel like you're able to be assertive and push someone away when they touch you in a way that you don't want. And not everybody may feel capable of that. We're going to go into that in a little more detail, too.
I've been drugged before. I don't drink anymore. It's been 2.5 years. I'm starting to get back into the scene of things, and I definitely am more careful with myself. I never accept drinks that it's not a bottle of water that I open myself. Mm-hmm. But that's just protecting myself and my sobriety.
Which is important, right? We are responsible for ourselves at some level.
I have had someone try to pull me in someone's car without my consent.
Yes. We need to also always remember that it is not our fault if someone does something to us, right? So just because I heard from you a sense of guilt when you spoke earlier about, you know, setting a limit and feeling confused about when that limit was crossed, and taking responsibility for only drinking water that you've opened and so forth. It is really important, though, that we recognize that if someone is sexually assaulting us, the full responsibility and the full weight of that is on the person who has done it, not on us.
I also wanted to add one thing. I went to my very first play party this last December for New Year's.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And there were 11 of us. I knew two of them, and they're like, we're all going to be friends. You know, everybody knows somebody from somebody. And so I felt comfortable. When I got there were a lot of drugs and there were a lot of alcohol, and I was like, okay, well, I'm here, so I kind of did the best of it. But in one of the evenings, this one guy, like, I was playing with him, and then he just immediately wanted to rape me, and I was trying to push him away, and the more that I was pushing him away, the more violent he got. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of went along with it, and then he threw me across the room, he spat on me, he left. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that was like really, really freaky. And then he did that to a couple other people until somebody said something.
Okay.
So again,
so even within an intimate setting, even within a party of friends, it's still possible, and I'm really sorry that happened to you, to experience that sort of violation and to feel like maybe the only way that I can handle this is to go along with it so that I don't get violated even more or I don't get hurt even more, is something that sometimes happens for people, right? That maybe the only way I have to deal with this in the moment is to just not resist too much. That does not mean that you're consenting.
And the last thing I was going to add is that I have piercings. A lot of people automatically assume that I like to be pushed and bitten, and I'm very sensual.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that comes from education. Like, I need to let whoever I'm playing with that I don't care for that kind of play.
It's all well and good for you to let people know that, but what's the responsibility of the people playing with you?
That's why I believe in long stretch of the foreplay, because that's why I find out where the limits are. Because I'm not much of a talker, so I just like exploring.
So you explore as a way to figure out limits?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm not into the toys. I like my hands on. So if you feel them tightening up, you know to slow down, figure out what I did wrong, then go forward. You can always tell when they're tightening up instead of relaxing and, you know, getting into it.
Yeah, so there are nonverbal cues that will let someone know whether there's consent or not, right? I see your hand, and then I want to move forward.
This relates to something that was said earlier. If
anybody Googles the phrase "how to deal with unwelcome attention without being, excuse me, without being a jerk," mm-hmm. that's one of the audio recordings from this room a few months back, specifically saying how to take responsibility for the conversation in situations where at least one of you isn't drunk. You know, because the rules change if one of you is inebriated. But if both of you are reasonably cogent, how to always take the situation and take ownership of it. So that's something that we recorded here a while ago.
Great. So I'm glad that there's some resource out there. Yes. Did I say okay? So I know, I see lots and lots of hands. We'll take you one last one.
To just go back to, you know, when I'm saying you know, if I let somebody know that I don't want to be touched and they continue doing that and, you know, it's unwelcome. And, you know, that's context. It's a situation where it's one-on-one. And I appreciate, you know, from Pup Tony's perspective, you know, for instance, when in the puppy pile, whatever, it's like, you know what, that's fine. I'm comfortable with that. It's free love, whatever. But I don't, you know, it doesn't mean it's free love all the time for me.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Can I come back to you in a little bit? All right. I want to make sure that I give you some real solid definitions before we move forward, okay? So let me pull those out. So a general way to talk about sexual assault is any unwanted sexual contact done without the person's consent. It's a very basic definition, right? Any sexual contact without consent, okay? That might mean different things in different contexts, right? So you may, when you get into a puppy pile, consent to whatever kind of touching is going to happen in that puppy pile. That's fine. And you may walk into the Eagle and say, you know what? I'm okay with being grabbed when I walk into the Eagle because that's a space that I know what's going to happen to me. I have an idea of what I'm expecting, and I'm okay with it. And so I'm consenting as I walk into that space. It doesn't mean that the next person who walks into that space has the same idea as you do about what that means for him. So we need to really be mindful that my limits and my sense of consent are not the same as the next person's, right? And so that's where it starts to get tricky. Because even though I might walk in and be fine with whatever happens to me, and I might have not ever had a bad interaction with someone because I've come up and grabbed them on the ass as a way to let them know that I'm interested, one person might have a problem with it. And that one person we have now sexually assaulted. That puts us in a really difficult place. We might not think of ourselves as people who are sexually assaulting other people. But if we're doing something that has never been an issue before and all of a sudden it's an issue for one person, that could be sexual assault. And so we want to be thinking about that. And, you know, Papa Tony did bring up at the very beginning this idea that, you know, the people who are out there sexually assaulting are psychopaths. And there certainly are people who are perpetrators who are really frightening people and who just have an agenda and are out there drugging people, raping them, absolutely predatory. And then there's sort of the rest of us, right, who have maybe crossed a line and didn't even realize we were crossing a line, who have maybe with a partner who we've been with for years and years and years done something that was always okay before and all of a sudden that night was not okay. I see some nodding. I see some recognition in our eyes, okay? This happens. It happens in our relationships. It can happen with people who are in long-term partnerships. It can happen with people you've only known for 2 minutes. Sexual assault is something that we're all responsible for making sure we are not doing to other people. And so what we're doing is looking for consent at all times. Okay? Now, there are some ways that that consent can look different in the kink community, and so we'll talk about that. Let me give you one other way to think about this. So the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom, NCSF, has a great website. They're a really fascinating and wonderful organization doing work to, on a legal front, change the way kink is treated and the way, you know, when cases come forward around, you know, abuse. Abusive relationships that involve an element of leather or kink, they often are involved in some way. They do a lot of education. So on their website, they're talking about consent is the explicit indication by written or oral statement by one person that they are willing to have something done to them by one or more other persons or to perform some sort of act at the request or order of one or more other persons. So it's not just the receiving. You don't just have to be the bottom in order to be sexually assaulted or to give consent, right? You can also be the giver, the top, in that situation. And so consent is happening both ways, right? So in terms of sexual consent, consent may be withdrawn at any point, regardless of what has been previously negotiated, either orally or in writing. It can be withdrawn at any time. So that goes to what you were talking about earlier when we brought up poppers, right? Because you might be in the process of having sex with somebody, and that consent can be withdrawn in that moment. Okay? Any questions about that?
I just had one.
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of splitting hairs, but I mean, if something had traditionally been okay in the past, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden it wasn't okay, legally, is it no longer okay once they, I mean, like, you wouldn't know unless they tell you no. So how is that handled? I mean, once they say no, obviously you need to stop, but if it had always traditionally been acceptable, you know, how are you able to, you know, how does the law actually deal with something like that? Well, they always said it was fine before. They didn't tell me until afterwards that it was no longer okay. I mean, you know, are we going to spend hours saying, is this still okay? And prefacing every step that we take with, you know, asking if a certain act is still acceptable. How do you deal with something like that?
Thank you for your question. So let's move. That's a good segue. Let's talk about how we're obtaining consent and what that looks like. Because if somebody has, you know, previously negotiated and agreed to and consented to things and then decides, I'm not in the mood tonight, or no, that's not okay. Legally, yes, that is sexual assault. That consent was withdrawn.
But I think it's interesting. I don't know if you're... I'm just talking about, like, that you started and they didn't say anything and then... said no,
right. So how would you even know?
How would you know?
So that's an important question that we need to address. How would you know? So I put a definition up here. This is the FBI's definition of rape. It got changed in 2012, and that's really important because prior to that, where do I have it? Prior to that, the definition of rape was only penis to vaginal penetration. Pretty limited, right? Pretty straight, number one. Number two, you know, not everybody has sex that way. So, and in California prior to 2012, legal definition meant that a man could not be raped. Okay? With the new definition, what's that?
Unless you had a vagina.
Unless you had a vagina. Thank you. And were penetrated by a penis. Okay? So, in 2012, that definition did change. The Department of Justice issued a new definition, and that's a really important one. So it's the penetration, no matter how slight, of the vagina or anus with any body part or object. So it could be with a dildo, it could be with, a pencil, it doesn't matter. With any body part or object, or oral penetration by a sex organ of another person without the consent of the victim. So it's nice because it includes consent in the definition, and that's really important. If it didn't, it meant that people would just be prosecuted willy-nilly, right? In this case, it's with the consent or without the consent of the victim, and so that means that someone is coming forward saying, right, I did not consent to this, so it was. Now, it could be a millimeter of penetration. It doesn't matter, as long as there was a penetration, no matter how slight, and that's an important definition. Any questions about that?
What's the FBI definition of consent?
Good question. and that I don't know. And it's an excellent one, and I will go look it up because I'm fascinated now to answer that.
What was the question?
The question was, what is the FBI's definition of consent? Right? And so let's talk about our definition of consent. So what, just in general, what does consent mean?
Permission.
Permission. Thank you. That's the basic understanding. Okay. Now, in the BDSM community, in leather, in fetish, when we talk about consent, what does that look like in general?
Willingness, allowing.
Okay, so allowing. And how do we typically give it? Yes, I saw your hand.
An understanding of what's going to happen between the two people.
So an understanding, and that's really important. It's the informed consent. It's not just consent. right? Because somebody might have never been single-tailed, think it looks pretty cool, but doesn't know what's involved, right? And might realize, unfortunately, after it's begun, that that's not what they consented to. So verbal negotiation. So I'm going to put up understanding of what's involved. And then verbal negotiation. Thank you. So that's one method that we obtain consent. How else do we obtain consent?
Ask the master.
Ask the master. Is that consent of the sub or slave?
Nope.
It is not. However...
I'm sorry, what question did you just ask?
How do we obtain consent?
And but then what was the next...
Oh, is it consent of the sub or slave if we ask the master?
No.
And it is not. Okay? However, protocol might dictate that we still have to ask the master. And that is important. Right? So let's not violate that consent, because that's an important negotiated relationship, and we need to respect that relationship. However, it is still not the consent of the sub, slave, puppy, so on.
It would not come up to legal snuff.
It would not come up to legal snuff, and no, it would not. Right? What else? How else do we obtain consent? Yes.
Well, let me ask you a question on that. Because I mean, if you ask the master and the sub slave doesn't say no at that point after the master has given permission, then it's still not consent. Is that correct?
Correct.
Interesting.
Just because someone doesn't say no does not mean that they have consented. What if what? What if they are?
Gagged.
Gagged. All right. So, in the cases that someone is gagged.
Well, see, you could ask the master, and the master might, and the dom and sub might have to negotiate understanding what it will require the sub's acknowledgement, because the master will understand that already. And he will inform the person who is inquiring upon the sub. But if the person who inquired upon the sub violates the terms of the agreement with the dom, then at that point the sub would know what those terms would have been and would have to acknowledge that, okay, this is not what was negotiated, and therefore consent is withheld.
Yes, so this does become complicated, right? Because there are negotiated contracts and there are agreements set in place between subs and doms, and those can be consent. However, it is still the responsibility of whoever is topping in that moment to be checking with the sub themselves,
right?
And they might be gagged, or they might, you know, not say explicitly no or yes, but there are other ways to be checking for consent.
Nodding.
Okay, so nodding. All right. What?
Well,
tapping. As long as the dick's hard, it's all good. What do we think about that? A lot of laughter. So, being aroused is a physiological response. It is not a substitute for consent. And it can be fear, right? Sometimes people are aroused by things that are scary, by things that are non-consensual. It's one of the reasons why being sexually assaulted, being raped, can be so confusing for the victim. Because you may be aroused, and you might think to yourself, well, it felt good, or I was aroused, therefore, is it really sexual assault? And it is. So our bodies can do things that might be in direct contradiction to what we're thinking or feeling about it. Okay? And that can feel incredibly confusing. It's one of the reasons why, even within the heterosexual community, women coming forward or don't come forward, in large part because, right, it's like, well, I was aroused, or I got wet, and so, you know, what does that mean? Does it mean that I wanted it? And the answer is no. However, so and absolutely the same is true. So if you have a penis and you're hard, it does not equal consent. Right? I saw a bunch of hands. Yes.
Are written contracts considered consent?
Are written contracts considered consent? So, by law, in BDSM, there is nothing that protects you. There is no protection under the law for written, verbally negotiated contracts, nothing. So when... And absolutely, and consent can be revoked any time. Now, within the community, right, there's the law. And the way the law perceives BDSM, fetish, leather, that's one thing. Within the community, when we're talking about consent, right, then yes, a contract may be consent. However, it can be revoked at any time. And no matter how well written that contract is, no matter how many people signed it, it is not a legal agreement. Okay? So there is no standing under the law for anything that is written down that involves BDSM. In fact, assault can be prosecuted and is often prosecuted even when all the parties are saying, no, we all consented to this. There have been many cases, you may have heard of some, that came forward. In Massachusetts, there's a really famous one called Paddleboro. People were playing at a house party. I mean, these were friends, they were playing, and somebody took out like a kitchen, you know, spatula. And they were just having a little fun. It was completely 100% consensual, and all parties were charged and prosecuted.
By
the police. The police got called because, I don't know, maybe there was a noise complaint. I forget the terms of the case. But the police showed up, knocked on the door, saw this happening in progress. Everybody got charged.
In a case like that just happened in London not 6 months ago, and under English law, which is a lot of American, falls under English common law, American law, but there you cannot consent in England to having somebody assault you. So BDSM is completely illegal on the books in London, and you are incapable of giving consent.
And the same thing is true here. Yeah. So in England it's true, and here it's true. You cannot consent to being assaulted, which is why they can prosecute. Okay? Yes?
I don't want to veer things off track way too much, but I also want to bring up something that you probably never hear. Mm-hmm. The framing of this entire discussion is all poor, poor victim. I have seen at least 8 times in the last 37 years where a vindictive sub decides that he's going to take down the top just to be vengeful. And then, of course, everybody believes the poor little victim sub because, gosh, look at that big, mean sir. And then somebody gets sent to prison because somebody wanted to break up with them and didn't want to make it, you know, do it in a normal and respectful and, you know, courteous way, and so then went to the news, here's in San Diego, in one case that I'm thinking of, and went to the news and made a lot of allegations, and went to the police and made a lot of allegations, and this perfectly nice, perfectly wonderful guy got sent to prison because some sub decided he just didn't want him, you know, to be in a relationship with anymore. So we spend an awful lot of time, oh, poor, poor, poor victim, but tops can be victims too.
Thank you. So that's one of the things that's a myth about sexual assault. Who is the victim? Who's the perpetrator, right? And the assumption is often that the smaller person, that the person who is the bottom or the sub, that the person who behaves in a more feminine way, that the person who, I don't know, likes to suck dick. I mean, it doesn't matter, right? All those are myths. That those are automatically the victim, and that the person who's bigger, stronger, meaner, toppier, more dom, more daddy, is always the perpetrator. Okay, so thank you for bringing that up. However, I also want to point out that the number of times that there is a false report of rape, so somebody coming forward claiming rape, is actually very, very low. It's between 1 and 2% of report. And those are just reported. So we know that only about the numbers of what gets reported to the police are extremely low. In some cases, the numbers are way off. I mean, we're thinking we're only getting about between 8 and 10% of actual sexual assaults being reported. So if 2% of those, so it's a much smaller percentage that are actually false reports. And the reporting rate is dramatically lower for men. So I put up a couple of statistics here just so you know, and we'll come back to the issue of consent in a second. 1 in 5 men One in five men report being sexually coerced, made to penetrate, or otherwise having unwanted sexual contact in their lifetimes. One in five. One in 71 men report being raped. And I don't know if that's under the old definition or the new definition. I'm thinking it's the new one, but I could be wrong. And recently there was a CDC report that came out, Center for Disease Control, that said that gay men were reporting intimate partner violence and sexual violence over their lifetime at levels equal to or higher than heterosexual folks. So gay men, it's happening. It's happening at higher rates in some cases. Okay? So a lot of myth is part of why this is happening and why it's being underreported. Folks thinking, it can't happen to us. It doesn't happen to men. It doesn't happen to gay men. It can't happen because we're agreeing to go into the Eagle and get our asses grabbed, so therefore it's not sexual assault, right? These are some of the reasons why, okay? So let's go back to this idea of consent. So we're looking for maybe some nonverbal ways that people might give consent. Yes?
An encouraging moan or a purr.
A moan or a purr. Thank you. Okay, so a squirm that looks like a happy wiggle, right? Okay, for the puppies out there. So body language is very, very important, right? So we're looking, what else might we be looking for in the body language?
As
far as consent or not? Okay, well, let's talk about non-consent. What else? Okay, hand up. That says stop.
Tightening of the body.
Okay. So tensing up. Heavy sweating, does that always mean lack of consent? Not always.
Even tightening up, because we're getting really into role play. And if it's a non-consent role play, that doesn't always mean it's really non-consent.
Thank you. So a lot of people play with consensual non-consent, rape fantasies, right? And so if, I'm sorry?
Growling.
Growling might be consent or non-consent.
Not.
Oh, if you're a puppy, absolutely. Growling is a big no, right? So growling for puppies. Thank you, puppy.
Well, if you're looking at someone's eyes. It can be really evident if it's fear or panic or love.
Well, love. And
so let me give you an example from my own personal experience. I enjoy playing with consensual non-consent. It's one of my favorite kinks. And I do this for a living. And maybe that's why I feel like I can. But one of my favorite ways to play, and I'm the bottom in this play. Well, not always. Sometimes I top in this as well. I'm a switch. Is I like looking very afraid. I like resisting really hard. I like looking terrified. I make sure my eyes look terrified. Okay? Because that's the fun of it.
The crazy
eyes. Right? Like, you know, like, right? And I tense up my body and I'm pushing with my legs and I'm pushing with my arms and, you know, I'm resisting in every way I can because that's what's hot. However, I have also found other ways to give that consent. And I always have a different signal with my partner that says, now is the time to slow down. This is a yellow, or I say yellow either verbally or if I'm gagged, it's, you know, a certain series of taps, right? So there are lots and lots of ways to be engaging and we can look scared. But if we have not negotiated some form of fear play, right, because other people do other things that's revolving, what's hot is fear. It doesn't have to be rape play. We are looking maybe at the eyes, right? Thumbs up, thumbs down could be a signal, okay? So, okay. Other things we might be looking for?
Ass up and down.
Ass up and down. Absolutely. Oops.
Well, particularly about the ass, I mean, arching of the back. I mean, if you have a particular way of arching it,
absolutely. So somebody might be indicating that they're receptive by arching in a particular way, wiggling their ass a little bit, whatever. You know, like there's indications that somebody is saying, come and get me. And in return, the top is also indicating consent. In what ways? grabbing it. Yes. Yes means yes. Okay. What else might a top be doing that's indicating consent?
Oh, I don't want to do.
I can say no, but I'm still going to do it, right? Yes. So people are engaging in sex as a form of consent, but there might be other things that a top is doing. Can anybody think what else might be verbal or nonverbal indicators?
Massaging.
Kissing. And what kind of verbal things?
Purring.
I'm sorry?
Purring.
Purring.
what my big specialty is flogging beginners. And, I can't tell you how many hundreds and hundreds. And one of the ways that I find out where I'm at in the consent cycle is I'll say, on a scale of 0 to 10, with 10 being intolerable, where are we? And that way I'm calibrating to find out where we are. Because if they're saying 8, I'm going, I'm backing down.
8 is yellow, right? Yeah. Right. So that scale, raise your hand if you've ever used a rating scale before. Awesome. Right? Raise your hand if you've ever used red, yellow, green before. I should see most hands. other safe words of some form. Thank you.
Ouch.
So, ouch is not a safe word. Unless it's been negotiated. Right? So, I have a friend who uses the term toast because he finds that, if he just wants to pause and, he'll say, can we have some tea and toast now? And it's a very nice, gentle way of stopping everything and saying, I think I'm done. I'll just have some tea and toast. So that's his.
And I found fire extinguisher works only if there's a fire, then you might get complicated signals there.
Fire extinguisher can be a good one. Yeah.
I use refrigerator.
Refrigerator.
It has nothing to do with sex.
Yeah, it's a word you may never use, right?
Or bacon.
Baking. Bacon or baking? There you go. You have to know who you're playing with, what words they might say. So that brings us to another issue around consent, which is playing with people that we don't know very well versus playing with people we know really well, right? So what sorts of issues do you imagine come up? Either one. So, yeah. So, people you don't know or people you do know.
Miscommunication.
So, miscommunication is a definite concern. And how might that happen with someone you know really well?
Assumptions.
That's the big killer here, right? So, we want to be really careful that we're not assuming. Okay. Yes. Landmines. Tell me more about that.
I've talked about it here, but since you haven't heard it, when I'm playing with somebody and suddenly it goes really sideways without any warning over something that is totally innocuous, then it's because suddenly I reminded them of their dad assaulting them or something else bad. Suddenly I can tell they want to punch me or they want to curl into a ball or they will start crying. And at that point, I stop the play. I then work them through it, I comfort them, I make sure that they know that their feelings are valid, I listen, hear them out, and then we get back on that horse and ride.
All right. So landmines, it sounds like what you're talking about are triggers. And people bring into play and also into vanilla relationships all kinds of triggers, right? Stuff from childhood, stuff from previous relationships. It's there, it's real, and we need to be mindful of it. Just because you've done one particular kind of play for 10 years doesn't mean that something else didn't trigger someone in their daily life and all of a sudden it comes out in play, right? They might have seen someone that looked like their dad walking down the street. They haven't thought about their dad in 10 years, but all of a sudden now he's on his mind. And all of a sudden now it's an issue in the bed. Make sense? So we never know when a trigger is going to come up and we cannot predict it. So we have to be watching for it, listening for it, paying attention. And if we see someone get triggered, we might see some signs. What kinds of things might someone do when they're being triggered? Yes?
Fight, flight, or withdrawal.
Freeze.
Curling up in a ball.
Yeah, curling up in a ball, right? Fight, flight, or freeze. So the curling up in a ball is the freezing.
Crying.
Crying might be a signal.
Anger.
Anger might be a signal. Yeah. Laughing hysterically might be a fear reaction.
Yeah.
It absolutely might be a nervous reaction. Mm-hmm. Now, do any of those in isolation necessarily mean that someone is triggered and wants the play to stop?
No.
But we're looking for context. We're looking for the complexity here. So we're trying to decide, and if it's someone we know pretty well, maybe we know a little of their history, and we go, uh-oh, they don't normally do this. What's happening right now?
That's where you would take the initiative and say, are you okay?
So you would check in.
Yeah, you would check in. I mean, one of the things that I like to do when I'm going to be the top, I like to choke. Mm-hmm. I don't choke very hard, but just enough to let them, you know, feel that I have their, you know, they're under my control. Mm-hmm. And I will continue to push the limits, but I will talk to them, like, just relax, I'm not going to hurt you, I'm just pushing you to your limit, and then, you know, I want you to get used to this, and then we'll progress. And then at the same time, are you doing okay, or is this okay? And then either they'll say, no, it's not okay, in very plain English, and then just pull back.
And what if they cannot say anything while you're choking
them?
So you're not choking them that hard.
I'm not choking them in each other line. I'm just like, I'm holding them very firmly.
Yeah.
So there is some constriction, but not significant.
Thank you.
To prevent them from talking.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things, and this is just a side note, every time I hear this, I think of it. You choke on a ham sandwich. This is strangulation, okay? So we talk about choking in the community as a fetish, as a kink, as a form of play. However, of the legal definition and what a cop will say is this is strangulation. And so you'll see things when someone has been strangled really hard, you'll see petechia in the eyes, the burst vessels. And if someone has been choked close to death, they may release their bowels or urinate, right? So, and in those cases, the cops will actually charge as attempted murder. Yes. If someone got to the point where they're releasing their bowels, it means that the body has given up, that it's already decided that the end is near, and that that's attempted murder. So even if the person's alive. So it's just something to be aware of. We all know that breath play is very, very dangerous, right? We all know that we have to be really, really safe with that and play very, very carefully with that, right? Okay, good. No! I'll just choke whoever I want. It's fine. Very, very dangerous play. Yeah. Lots of fun. Very dangerous. Yes?
I don't know if you're ready to move on to the next chick.
Go right ahead.
One, but accidents happen.
Accidents do happen. Tell us about that.
You can very easily accidentally, you know, cross someone's limit. Condoms break. Whips miss. There's a lot of different ways.
Yeah. So condoms break, whips miss. We might be really skilled at, you know, doing whatever we're doing, and we can still have an accident. No matter how skilled you are, we've probably all wrapped a flogger around somebody's ribs by mistake, you know. Yeah, it's not fun. It happens, right? And we can try really hard not to, but we want to be mindful of that. So what do we do in those situations? Yes.
Immediately apologize and promise not to do it again, and don't do it again.
So immediately acknowledge it, right? We have to acknowledge it happened. Because what happens to the other person if we don't notice and pay attention and say, this just happened?
They might think that you're dangerous right. to some degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, loss of trust.
They might think you're dangerous. They might think it was intentional. And even if they don't think it was intentional, what will they think about you as a top?
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, you are not a good top, right? You can't even acknowledge when something went wrong. So we want to acknowledge it right away, apologize, make sure it does not happen again. And if we don't feel like our skill level is up to par, then we want to be practicing more on that pillow, right? You know, try not to practice on people before you get it right.
It's important to say that if you made a mistake and they don't complain, that's not consent either. To ignore that, you know, but I think it's got to be asked. You know, I didn't mean to hit you on the ribs. You know, if they say, oh yeah, ouch.
Yeah, so, you know, a mistake doesn't mean that we were intentionally violating consent, whether or not the person says anything. And after we acknowledge it, you know, they might, I think, realize, oh, that crossed a limit for me, and maybe I said something, maybe I didn't. But when we acknowledge it, we're taking responsibility for what we just did. And the likelihood that it will be perceived as this intentional sexual assault is much, much lower, right? Now, if we keep doing it, that rate goes right up, right? So that changes. I saw somebody else's hand. No, okay. So there might be miscommunication, and that can happen within established relationships. Let's talk about someone you're doing pickup play with. Pickup play. You're just engaging in play spontaneously at a party or at a bar with someone you don't know very well.
Mm-hmm. I always want to tell a story about a guy that was referred to me by a coworker, and he said, "You got to hook up with this guy. He's really awesome, fantastic bottom, blah blah blah." So I drove over. I made arrangements. I never saw him before. I made arrangements to go to his place, and when I came in, I realized that he was going to let me do absolutely anything I wanted. He didn't know me at all. He barely even asked me my name. He was turning his home over, which was fantastic. He turned himself over completely. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. I mean, he completely was defenseless. And so I just immediately handcuffed him to his furniture.
Because that's the obvious thing to do.
I started taking clothes off, and I made him sit there, and then I started lecturing him. I'm like, are you kidding?
That's awesome.
He can have beautiful art. I'm like, look at that. Wouldn't that fit in my car? I did. I lectured him for like a half an hour. I had him crying. I'm like, here, let me let you go. Should I just leave now? Because you're an asshole. You know?
Wow.
And then,
that's
but then
perfect.
It just came on. Right, because
you were an honest person.
Yeah, but I just couldn't believe somebody would do that.
So you took responsibility as a really responsible and thoughtful top, and you did not just even play,
no.
Right? It was, let me tell you where you went wrong,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I saw your hand.
Yeah, but on the other note, when I hook up with people, if they are recommended to me by people who I absolutely admire and respect, in the back of my mind, I know it's going to be okay and I'm not going to have a problem with it. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to, like, do whatever you want to me, but, you know, it's very different than you've never met the person, you have no idea who the person is, but if you're recommended by somebody who you truly trust and truly respect and is respected in the community and has a stellar reputation, then you really, you know, I let my guard down.
Well, let me just qualify by saying the other guy had only met him one time.
Oh.
So that's not maybe meeting someone one time is not enough for a recommendation, right? But if someone is well-respected, maybe you let your guard down. Do you have a comment about that as well?
I do have a comment about that because one of the times when we were first hooking up a long time ago, we did the same thing. We were playing with some rope. He was tied up. We were getting at that point. It's fun. It's negotiated. He's naked. I'm not. All the little toys are laid out. And I'm like, so what can I do to you? And he's like, anything you want, sir. And I was like, so I can shit down your throat. I can break half of your ribs. And then I can do, and he's like, well, no. And I'm like, well, then what can I do to you? Because you need to be very specific here. You're tied up. You need to think about that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Same thing.
So saying anything you want is not consent. That's not good qualified consent.
Answer four most fabulous words any Don wants to hear, but really you need to be very specific about saying them.
It's a great way to turn someone on. It's a really bad way to consent, right? So I do want to offer a potential example of something that might contradict a little bit of what you said, which is that I have a friend who was in a poly relationship. He was boy to mommy and daddy, and they wanted him to play with a friend of theirs, very well-established person in the community, really well-known, a personal friend of mommy and daddy. And they've known him for 20 years. He raped my friend. It happens. It absolutely happens. It absolutely happens. So, knowing that, does that mean we don't play with recommended people? Not necessarily. Do we do our own investigation?
Yeah.
Yes. Does that mean that even if we go on someone's recommendation, and even if we do our own investigation into someone, that it is our responsibility for being raped or sexually assaulted?
No.
Well,
most people who are raped know the person.
Yes, thank you. So 80% of sexual assaults are perpetrated by someone who is known to the victim. Yeah. Just really quick.
A lot of it has to do with an experience, too. I was raped when I was 16 years old by somebody that I knew. It was somebody that I worked with for several months. That one of my first jobs. He was an older gentleman. I was sort of attracted to him, and I think maybe he knew it. But we went to Palm Springs to go work at another business that he had over there, and we had a hotel room for the weekend. And when I got into the hotel room, there was only one bed, and I was a little scared and hesitant. But what am I going to say? This is my boss, somebody that's older. He pays me to work for him. And the first night that we were there, we went out to a fancy dinner, and he bought me alcohol. I was only 16 years old. He was 40. And in the middle of the night, I woke up, and he was on top of me.
Yeah. Thank you for feeling comfortable to share that here. I appreciate it. You know, coercion is an important part of this, and it's a piece that we need to talk about, especially when we're talking about the BDSM community, because you're talking about a power dynamic with you and a boss, someone older, someone who pays you your wage, someone who has just bought you dinner and alcohol, and you're underage and inexperienced, right? And so this is someone who has power and authority in your life. Not your daddy, not your sir, but your boss, right? And that is coercion. So it comes up when we're talking about BDSM as well, when we start talking about the intricacies of master-slave relationships, of dom-sub relationships, puppy owners, right? All of these can introduce an important element, and it's a lot of fun to play with, but power exchange. Great, awesome, hot. And also the potential for coercion. Right? So when we have those dynamics in place with someone, whether it's been for a short time or a long time, we have to always recognize that they're existing there. We can't pretend like they don't exist. And we especially can't pretend that they don't exist when we're not playing. So even if, let's say, we're not 24/7, right? And sometimes we're having kind of regular sex or whatever, and sometimes we're playing. That dynamic often is still in someone's head, even if it's not explicit, right? So if you have a daddy and sometimes you're having just regular sex and sometimes you're boy to daddy, sometimes that regular sex can still feel like, well, he's still my daddy, right? That person is still that person to you in a lot of ways. It doesn't just go away because in that moment, you're not explicitly doing that behavior. So what kinds of issues do you see that could be consent issues there? How does that go awry?
Missed signals.
Did you say mixed or missed?
Missed.
Okay. Thank you. What else?
Too high of a level of intensity. So maybe I agree to be clogged, but not, you know, in certain levels.
Thank you. So just because I agree to be flogged or have anything done to me doesn't mean that I want it at, you know, a 9.5, right? I don't want to necessarily be taken right up to the edge. Or maybe I don't want to be taken up to that edge so fast. Maybe I need to be warmed up. That can be a violation for someone, right? What else?
Mm-hmm. I feel like, especially based on your story, like we should at least acknowledge the kind of rape that, with consent, is still rape.
Statutory rape. Okay, so a minor in California is under 18. If someone is under 18, there's no age of consent in California. There's no, like, if you're at least 16 or anything like that. If you're under 18, you cannot consent to sex in California at all. And that's an important thing to know. And every state might be a little different, but here, there's no such thing as, you know, like, well, I was only a year older, and he was 17, and I was 18. Doesn't matter. It's still rape, okay? So, minors. It's important. Yes?
On the example you just brought up, mm-hmm. an 18-year-old to a 17-year-old, are you suggesting that the 18-year-old raped the 17-year-old?
What I'm saying is, by law, yes. What the law says and what those people say might be two different things. So the 17-year-old might say, no, I totally consented. He's my boyfriend. What are you talking about? The law is still going to say that that's rape.
And the parents
might jump in there too, right? But if a district attorney comes in and is trying to, or a law enforcement officer is trying to come in and determine what's going on, it's still, a minor cannot consent in California.
California claim prosecuting authority if you are, say you're 18, you go to Arizona, say their age of consent 16. Mm-hmm. In California, it's still 18, you're a Californian resident. Go over there, you have sex with somebody that's 16, 17, and they still prosecute you, much like...
I'm pretty sure it's where it happened, but I'm not 100% sure.
I was wondering because, well, federal law, if you go off to Thailand and you have sex with someone that's of the age of consent there, but not for our federal age of consent, you can still be tried under U.S. law. Right? So I was
interesting.
Wondering...
Good question. Agreement. I don't know how to answer that question without more research, and I don't want to give you a wrong answer, okay?
Don't go to Thailand.
Don't go to Thailand. That's your answer. Or Arizona, for that matter. For a lot of reasons, okay? Let's just be honest. Yes?
The thing with Thailand is that it's a treaty that's negotiated with Thailand.
Okay.
Because of the sex trade, it's a specific condition.
I didn't know that.
Normally, age of consent laws, I have a degree in law enforcement.
Excellent.
Normally, age of consent laws, it's within a couple of years that you can be charged or not charged. It's like if you're an 18-year-old in some jurisdictions. In California, it's different because in California, you have to be 18 to consent to sex. But if you travel to Arizona and the age of consent is 17 in Arizona, if you are more than 3 years older than the 17-year-old in Arizona, you can be charged for statutory rape. If you are less than 3 years, then you can't. So if you are an 18-year-old that's dating a 17-year-old and you screw your girlfriend or boyfriend, it's not necessarily rape, statutory rape. It depends. And again, it varies by municipality and jurisdiction. And no, California cannot prosecute you for sleeping with a 17-year-old in Arizona. That would have to happen in Arizona. It's the same way if you go to Amsterdam and smoke weed, you haven't broken the law in America, even though weed is illegal here.
Thank you so much.
It is illegal in Amsterdam.
Thank you for clarifying. Excellent. So let's think, and then I want to make sure we have a couple minutes at the end, too. Let's think about a couple of other cases where someone cannot consent. So we already talked about being intoxicated, okay? Unconscious, thank you. Yes, hold on. Let me make sure I'm spelling this even a little bit right. So, mentally... mummified. Well, depends on what level of mummification we're talking about, right? But if someone can bat an eye, right? Two blinks, that's no. Three blinks, that's yes. Let me just make sure I've got... what I want here. What else? What other conditions?
Dead.
I'm sorry?
Dead.
Dead. Yeah. We're getting into necrophilia, which,
Chuck, you are a kink.
Your kink might not be my kink. That's okay. So we talked about coercion, okay? So being threatened or coerced... Right, so blackmail, that's coercion. If someone says, if you don't do this, I'm going to out you. If you don't do this, I'm going to tell people you're positive. If you don't do this, I will make sure that nobody in the scene ever plays with you again. Yeah, right? So someone can consent before, but not this particular time. So that is a lack of consent. Consenting to one act, but not another, that's a lack of consent. Silence is a lack of consent, right? We've already talked about that. And again, not having the developmental capacity as an adult. So minors and people who don't have, or people who do have a developmental disability, okay?
What if, I don't know, maybe you can answer this, but what if, say, someone's like Britney Spears and has conservatorship? They're still mentally sound, but are they, if they're under a conservatorship, do they still have the right to
consent? They don't
have
power to consent.
They do not have, you cannot have sex with Britney. Not that I'm sure you would anyway. Maybe you would, I don't know. ask her master, and then we'll, no. Yeah, and then, I mean, we get into the tricky business, you know, with in BDSM with master and any DS dynamic of trafficking, right? So trafficking, we're not necessarily talking about cross-border trafficking. We're talking about somebody allowing someone else, especially if there's money exchanged, right, to have sex with somebody else. What? It is illegal. Trafficking is illegal, right? But I knew there was someone who called our hotline back in Boston who was being trafficked. She was a slave to her master. She was being transferred from one master to another, and she didn't know where she was, but she did have access to our phone number for, you know, she had seen our card up and called us and was like, I don't know if I agreed to this or not. Because I signed a contract, I'm a slave, and now I'm being sold to another master. And so we worked through it with her. But it's, you know, it presents some really tricky situations. She was, in fact, being trafficked, right? She was being moved. And you can be moved one block over, it's still trafficking. You can be in the same city, right? And you can be, you can fall under trafficking laws. So give me one second. I want to make sure we address your question initially, and then I know you had one as well that we should talk about before we end. So what do we do when we don't necessarily, we've had agreed upon consent over, let's say, a certain series of acts, right? And someone is withdrawing their consent, and how do we know? So we talked a little bit about the nonverbal cues, right? What is our responsibility?
To make sure.
To make sure.
To notice.
To keep checking in, to notice, to be looking, asking, right?
Be okay with it.
Yeah. We have to be okay. If someone withdraws consent, we have to be okay stopping.
Sure.
Otherwise, we shouldn't be doing it in the first place. Right?
To not guilt
them. Yeah. And so then we get into coercion. So if we're guilting someone about withdrawing consent, if we're saying, why, you always liked it before, what's wrong? How come? You don't love me now? Right. What's that?
Big sissy.
You big sissy. If we're, yeah, if there's, even if normally in play it's okay to use that verbal abuse or humiliation, as soon as someone starts withdrawing consent, we want to be real careful to not be engaging in that type of play until we figure out what's going on, right? Because if we're using verbal humiliation in play and someone is withdrawing consent, that is now coercion. Yeah.
But technically what you're saying by law is they could do nothing and you do it and it's too late. And then they say no and you're in trouble. You're
yes.
Trouble.
Yes.
Because they can show absolutely no sign of any sort of change in consent, and unless you verbally check with them ahead of time, and even if you verbally check with them and then they change their mind in that split second, technically, legally, you could be in trouble.
Technically, legally, you're in trouble. Yeah. Yeah. Sex is a really dangerous business, right? You never knew. When your parents told you, you know, sex is dangerous, you had no idea what they were talking about.
And that's true, because sometimes people will take it to extreme. I know when I was 24 years old, I went home with a guy, and we did bondage. I was tied up. I was gagged. Okay, that was cool. But then when he pulled out the knife and started doing this, okay, I couldn't say anything, and that wasn't cool anymore. So that's not what I was into. And then he started doing other things that weren't agreed upon.
Yeah.
And I was helpless. I couldn't do anything about it. So thank goodness he never slit my throat because I'm here. But that taught me right then. Okay, you know, you can tie me up, but this hand's free, motherfucker. You know?
So yeah, and so you may always negotiate after that experience that you always have one hand free, or that you always are ungagged, or you know, there might be, you know, a whole series of things that you negotiate. I'm really sorry that you experienced that. Yeah.
But you know, you learn. But that's something I was trying to point earlier is,
yeah,
if you may have agreed upon this, and someone may take it further. It's like, mm-hmm, oh, I've always wanted to do this. Let me try it out on you. And it's, yeah, that was very scary.
Or even you might be okay with someone cutting into your leg. And all of a sudden, they're like, well, I got this knife, and it might be fun to kind of play with a little fear at your throat. You might have agreed to a knife play in one place and not in another. I mean, body parts, all of it, it has to be negotiated. Yes.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I wrestle with what you're saying because on one aspect, I don't want to know everything that's going to happen. Part of the whole idea,
sure,
of playing is the the fear dynamic, the being under somebody else's control and not knowing what's going to happen. So how can you consent to every little detail in play? I think you have to consent to certain parameters, maybe outline, what you can't, don't do this, don't do that, but then you can't anticipate all of that either. So it's a very complicated.
Or have those safety words, safe words, yellow.
And so the safe words are very important.
You initiate, the whole thing. Sometimes it's like, forget it.
Too hard.
Exhausted in the process. Yeah.
Well, and in this case, he could have done anything he wanted to, but the sharp knife to the neck,
how were you able to negotiate out of that once you're bound and gagged?
I kept wiggling.
But you didn't have a safe word or sign.
I was gagged. We had one, but I didn't realize that after he gagged me, I can't say that. I can't scream.
So a lack of experience, right?
I was 23 years old or 24.
Yeah.
Or
meant that you didn't know how to indicate and negotiate a safe word.
And I've learned it with my boys and stuff like that. They see the knife before we do.
Yeah. So I'm aware of the time, and I really want to address a couple of things before we close up.
On the topic of time,
yes,
we're only limited in that we have to leave by 11 o'clock.
Okay.
We commonly stay as much as an hour and a half late.
Okay.
If we have to keep going, it's okay.
All right. Well,
we'll leave if they need to leave.
How about this? I want to respect that some people may need to leave at 9, and there's a couple things I want to make sure we address. So let's do that, and then we can stay, and I'm happy to stay as well. I have no problem with that, and I can answer all your questions. So consent is a tricky business, and we don't necessarily want to negotiate every last stinking detail of a scene. However, we can set in place some really important limits. We absolutely should be talking about safe words and whether or not we're gagged or bound, right? And how we're going to indicate consent otherwise or lack of consent. And that, whose responsibility is that?
Both.
It's both. Whose responsibility is it to maintain it?
Everyone.
Everyone. And whose responsibility when that person is gagged, bound in subspace, which we haven't talked about, but we should... when someone's in that like floaty, wonderful place and everything is good, right? What's that?
It would be the Dom.
And then the Dom is responsible for always making sure and checking in, because that's the person who has more ability in that situation to figure out what's going on, right? So it's and just because it's the sub or bottom's responsibility to, be negotiating these things and talking about them and raising them when possible, it doesn't mean that the sub or the bottom is always going to feel able in that moment to use a safe word or a safe indicator, right? So there are some things, and I want to delve into that for anyone who can stay. However, before we go, before some of you may need to go, I do want to talk about... the role of Stonewall, Citizens Patrol, and have Gabe come up and say a couple words about what's going on there. So let me give you this.
It feels so ritualistic.
I know.
Hello, everybody. Again, to remind you, my name is Gabriel, and I'm here to represent Stonewall Citizens Patrol. How many of you have heard about us? You've seen us driving the vehicle around on Friday nights, Saturday nights? So our role in this community is to watch out for our community. We do patrols mostly on the weekend nights, driving around where the bars are. We pass the Eagle quite a bit, and we look out for potentially dangerous situations. We drive through alleyways. If there's some hanky-panky going on in the alleyways, we take a good look to make sure that it's not anybody being coerced against their will. Our role is not to become involved, but if we see something that is going, what appears to be going wrong, we will slow down, we will take a look, and we will call the police or the medics if necessary. Right now we're sort of talking about things happening in the BDSM world, but other things that I know that we've been talking about were people drugging others at the bars and stuff. Also, I've heard talk of one particular person targeting people on Adam for Adam. I've heard that's been an issue as well. So... what you need to do is you need to take care of yourself. And if something like this happens to you, please, please, please report it to the police. Absolutely. Also, to let you know that we are here at Stonewall Citizens Patrol we are out there keeping an eye out for stuff. The reason that Stonewall Citizens Patrol has come into being is in 2006, after Pride, there were a few people that were targeted leaving Pride that were attacked. So that is how this organization started up. So that's what we do is on the weekend evenings, we have two people. We patrol in the vehicle. We check the bars. We make sure that people aren't drunk and out driving. And mostly we do try to make sure that nobody is being attacked, being assaulted. So that is our role in the situation. If you ever see our vehicle out driving around and you need assistance, if something's happened, feel free to flag us down and we can help. Get you help if there's ever a need for assistance from the police. We can call the police for you. We have a liaison with an LGBT liaison with the police force. His name is Officer Dan Meyer, and he works very closely with us. So they're very.
If anybody wants to contact him for any reason, just contact him. I've got his contact.
There we go. There we go. So, anyways, basically, my role here tonight is just to let you know that. We have people within our community that is also looking out for us. So feel free, like I said, if you ever see us driving around, we're aware of the situations that have been going around, the rumors and stuff. Well, not rumors, but actual stuff that's happened. So we're kind of heightened alert to keep an eye on stuff of that situation. We're also looking for volunteers. So did you have your hand up?
Have you actually intervened?
I'm sorry?
Have you actually intervened?
I've have a couple times, but I tend to patrol the early route because I like to go to bed early because I'm old. But some of the guys that patrol the later routes, because we have two shifts, we have from 9 to midnight and then from midnight to 3 a.m. The guys that do the later shifts see a lot of stuff going on. They see a lot of stuff. I've dealt mostly with drunk people getting beat up by homeless people. So, yeah, nothing real exciting. But, you know, we're trying. And, again, we could always use other volunteers, so if anybody is ever interested in volunteering, go to stonewallcitizenspatrol.org, and there's an email address that you can contact. It might take them a while to get back to you, but it would be awesome to have some guys from the fetish community in Stonewall, because we don't have that many. So, anyways, that's about it. Does anybody have any questions? No?
Just a quick comment.
Yes.
If you see Stonewall Citizens Patrol, make sure you give them a nice big hug and a thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
The website. Feel free to write it.
So of course, it's a little after 9, so anyone who would like to leave and needs to do that, please, anytime. So we were talking a little bit about issues of consent when someone is submissive. And so I wanted to kind of touch on that a little bit. So when someone is in subspace, what is someone's ability to consent, do you think?
It's altered. Endorphins are just like a drug.
Endorphins are a drug, right? It can be altered. It doesn't mean that unequivocally someone in subspace cannot consent. They certainly can. However, it requires a lot more attentiveness and a lot more checking in. Right? When someone's in that place.
If they're in subspace, they're consenting.
They're consenting if they're in subspace?
Absolutely.
To anything you do?
Yeah. Well, no, not anything, but what's happening right there and there.
So whatever got them into subspace?
Yes.
Okay, what do you think?
Well, I think it's important that if anything starts to change, you start doing something different, that's the point in which permission needs to be granted.
Okay, so you're saying permission needs to be sought
doing
if you're going to change anything.
If you're going to change anything, carters, whatever, it's got to be consented first.
Okay, so it needs to be consented before you shift any kind of gear there.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
You protect yourself legally, I think.
Legally and, frankly,
morally,
you know, morally, right?
And morally afterwards, I think, aftercare, because usually when you're in a subspace, you come out, you need some aftercare. And that's probably not legal or anything, but you just, it's something a good cop or a good person should be there, because it takes a bit to come out.
Yeah, so my thing, and I actually will not play with someone ever if they don't do good aftercare. That's my hard limit. You don't do aftercare, fuck you, I am not ever playing with you, right? Not ever, not once, right? Because to me that's really, really important. That's the time where all the stuff might be coming up, there might be emotional stuff, there might be, you know, especially because I do a lot of edgy stuff, I like it, it's intense, And I'm not going to do that with someone who I don't know is going to really take care of me in that moment, right? Yes.
Something that I wanted to say, especially on the topic of miscommunication or, you know, later someone's in subspace, I think it's really important for subs to go into a situation having put the limits down in words. It's verbally, like, it's so easy to lose track. If we just talked about it, you know, 2 hours later, we forget, you know, how exactly did he word that? What was his limit? So I always, it's whether it's a text message or an email or a bar napkin, it's something you can always refer back to. You know, this isn't necessarily for legal things, but when you're resolving an issue with a top or a bottom later, you have a point of context. You know, here are the limits we talked about. And, you know, it's not necessarily drawing up a contract every time, but gosh, I have, you know, my limits saved in multiple places, so I can refer to them and send them along whenever, you know, I'm going to engage with someone.
Thank you.
Whether I know them well or not, it's so important.
Yeah. So this could be, you know, a regular partner. This could be a one-time partner. I like the bar napkin, right? Jotting it down is really, really handy. Who here has ever used, like, an actual negotiation checklist? Has anybody ever used one of those? Yeah, or like a map or something, a body map. This part of the body's okay, this part's not, right? Sometimes that can be super helpful. I knew a pro dom once who had a little black book with every client. And every single person, it was like this exhaustive list of, like, you know, exactly what was okay. I mean, if you're a pro dom, this is your business. You better know, right? So, yeah, absolutely. So that can be a very powerful thing, both for the top and for the bottom. So I'll give you an example from my own experience. I have a few things that are hard limits for me. But there's one in particular that I always forget about because it's something I have an issue. I have a disability. I'm hard of hearing. And so if you're hard of hearing and someone is not speaking loudly enough about checking in with you, I've had tops checking in but saying it so softly I had no idea that they were saying anything. And, of course, the sound of the floggers and the whips and whatnot, and if you're at a play party, it's noisy. I had no idea, and I remember the first time where someone was trying to check in and I couldn't respond because I couldn't hear them, right? And so I have now, and I forgot to mention that I'm hard of hearing. It just slipped my mind. It was one of those things where it's something that's been developing over years, and I've often forgotten that I have this particular disability. So I didn't say anything about it. Had I said something, that person would have known to get right in my ear and to talk loudly. But I didn't say it because I didn't think of it. So now I actually carry with me, if I'm going to do pickup play with someone I don't know very well, I have a list. And I just, and FetLife is so good for this because I can put it all up there and just be like, if you didn't read the manual, we're not playing, right? So that can be a really good tool, right? What else might be a tactic for, you know, keeping track of what you've negotiated?
I guess if you're going over to somebody who has a play space, a dungeon or whatever, I guess a safeguard would be you have a dry erase board and you just write down what the limits are, and then if you forget, you just reference.
Cool idea. I like it. Yeah. So using a dry erase board or some kind of something out of play space.
I was thinking it would be nice to have a deck of cards with all the options.
You know, ooh. I can see the start of a business for you. Deck of cards with all the different, you know, you can have, depending on which way it's flipped, it's top or bottom. Or, yeah, right, love it. Oh, with the pictures. Well, think about it, though, right? Sometimes people aren't very verbal. So pictures can often be worth 1,000 words. And when we're playing, right, somebody might not know what sounding is, but if you show them a picture of a sound, they will know where it goes, right? So it's important that we are communicating on lots of levels. It's informed consent. I'm coming right back to you. No? Okay.
What about pitching somebody you trust along with what's going to happen that's not going to necessarily be involved with the top and bottom, whatever they're going to do, but somebody that's going to be there watching and something gets out of hand that they're there to break it off?
Especially if you're an exhibitionist, then this works really well for you, right? But yes, having someone you trust who can observe or who can be present nearby in case anything happens is a great idea. That's why play parties are often really good spaces for people initially, right? If you're not used to playing with a particular person, there's an entire community of people around you kind of going, let's make sure that this is okay. And hopefully the dungeon monitors are really on top of it, right? Yes.
As I said, I play with beginners all the time, like every week. And I'm sitting here, you know, I feel like, oh God, am I having to defuse a bomb every time I'm going to approach a new person? But honestly, I've been doing this for decades. And what I always start out with is a declaration. I say, I'm not here to try and, you know, push your limits. I would rather underdo it than overdo it. So my intention, since I know you're going to remember this for the rest of your life, my intention is to make sure that it's a very wonderful experience for you, where we're going to high-five each other 40 years from now. Yeah, fuck yeah, wasn't that great? By making that declaration, it helps them a lot, because the big scary top is going to do something to them for the first time. But it really cleans up a lot of the communication. They feel safe enough to tell me what their limits are. Or, you know, please be careful with me. This is my first time that I say, I will make sure that, you know, nothing bad happens to you. And then afterwards, you know, I mean, during it, I'm checking in. Afterwards, I'm checking in. I say, when I'm done with them and I've done the aftercare, then I say, check back in with me in 20 minutes. I want to know how you're feeling. And I'm staying in communication throughout. I'm speaking in very responsible, very declarative terms, and I don't get bad experience.
Absolutely.
That's the daddy in
us.
Not picking on servants and masters, but that's the daddy in
us. The caretaking. Yeah. I think that there is a way to do that, even if you're not a daddy type, to just be checking in and responsible. And I think that you're right. This can sound really scary. It can sound like every single one of us is about to go sexually assault somebody. And that's not what I'm trying to say. Although I hope I did scare you a little bit, because I really like fear play. But what I am saying is that we want to be mindful. We want to be checking in. We want to be actively engaging in this process of consent. Consent is not one time. Consent is ongoing. So if we know that, we're looking for it regularly. Yeah.
Well, going earlier, what you said about do whatever you want is the master's, you know, dream phrase to hear. Yeah. So I guess at that point, you as a dominant person, because you'll have that physical control, can say, tell me what you don't want, and then everything else. You just go, and if I do something you don't like, you let me know right away. You lay down the rule. Then you will tell me you don't like this. Because you can't, like we said earlier, we can't list everything. So just tell me what you don't like, and every time I do something that we didn't discuss that you don't like, you let me know so that I change tack, you know.
And we need to create, if we're going to take that strategy, which I know some people do, we need to create safety measures to make sure that that person not only can physically say or indicate to us that it's okay or not okay, and that we're checking in doing that, but also that emotionally they feel like they can, right? Because so often, especially if someone is saying, hey, you're the master, do whatever you want, they've already in their heads kind of given that over. They've already given the power exchange before they've negotiated it, right? And so we want to make sure that we're doing a really good job up front of negotiating and then throughout negotiation or throughout the play negotiating, right? So it's important that emotionally really getting that person to talk or do something else. The example that this gentleman gave about sort of teaching him a lesson, even though that was an interesting way to do it, and I kind of laughed, but we do want to make sure that that person gets a really clear idea of just, you know, what that really means. And so an example of, so I can shit in your mouth, is a good wake-up call, right? Because, I mean, some people love it, but most people are going to go, maybe not, right? Or something else, right? Give them some examples of things that might not be okay.
Castration,
right? Absolutely, absolutely, right? Breaking your ribs. I mean, some people are really into, like, serious, hard, edgy play and are okay with it, and others are not. So they need to know informed consent what they're getting into.
You have to be really thoughtful when you do give your limits, whatever. Really think them through. Like, don't think of them on the spur of the moment. It's something you should know before you meet somebody. You know, what really think them out. You know, like, no castration. Well, I would have never thought of that, but if I tell you no permanent damage...
Well, then, yeah. See, that's an aspect, too. The sub has to stay in communication because something might come up that they never even considered, and then all of a sudden it's not all right with them.
Yeah.
So we have to keep communicating that, not wait for the top to check in.
Well, in the ideal world, yes, the sub, the bottom, would be continuing to communicate. In reality, what we know is that that often does not happen. And so it is always the job of the person running the fuck to check, right? Yeah.
Sometimes speaking as the person who says, do whatever you want, you know, that's from a lack of experience. But when you're with somebody, the person who has more experience, and who's obviously a nice guy you want to continue with him, should take the lead. Like, you know, you obviously don't know what the fuck you're doing. You're a greenhorn. But, you know, when they take the lead and they tell you and they guide you, then it really works out. And that's when you really find out that you really have somebody who's worthwhile staying with.
Absolutely. So this can be, no matter what role that person plays, it can be a top, a bottom, a slave, can be more experienced than a master, right? I have a lot more experience than my daddy. I have probably about 7 years of experience on him. He's a great daddy, though. He's instinctively one of those people who's really good. But he is less experienced than I am. So I often find myself doing some gentle guiding, right? Some gentle teaching with him, just to make sure that I'm okay. And he picks it up really fast, and I don't have to do a lot of that, which is nice for me. But the reality is that, yes, whoever is more experienced absolutely can be, you know, guiding that process. Thank you. Yes?
I describe myself as having superhero-class intuition.
Superhero-class intuition.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's probably why I'm so successful working with beginners. But if someone is withholding, if someone is being stoic, if someone is intentionally staying uncommunicative, I won't play with them. Also, if they're intoxicated, that's bad information. I'm not interested in that either. I have to know from moment to moment to moment what's going on in order to do a good job so that everybody wins, everybody succeeds. And I have to do an awful lot of just sheer watching, body language, breathing, you know, muscle tension, all these different things all the time, because somebody may not even have the words to describe what they're feeling or how they're doing it, but I'm constantly on the alert to see whether suddenly they veer off, and, you know, I have to be aware of that. So, I mean, as a responsible sir, I have to be fully present at all moments. I can't be thinking about something else. I have to be fully intentional and fully, fully aware of what's going on at every instant.
So thank you for bringing this up, because as we all know, tops, doms, have limits. And we have to be making sure that our limits are in place, too. So, yes, not playing with someone who's intoxicated. Making sure that if I'm not playing with people who are uncommunicative, who won't actually interact with me. I mean, that's your prerogative, and it's an important one. You might be really turned on by someone who's uncommunicative, but if you don't have some way of getting consent, then you're going to be up Schitt's Creek, right? So it's important. Right? And so maybe someone doesn't want to talk and be verbal. That's fine. There are other ways to get consent, right? Now, keep in mind, I keep talking about this consent, right? But legally, you can't consent to assault, ever, right? We're talking about within BDSM, how we play safe. So safe, sane, and always consensual really is important here. Yes?
It's not bad either to get ongoing consent throughout the play and getting it re-verbalized. I've got a boy that I play with whose big thing is the whole gag the fag scenario.
Uh-huh.
You know, he likes to go down, he likes to go balls deep, and as soon as he starts to pull off is usually when I put his head all the way in and hold it until he's just... But every time, he has to be able to catch his breath and say, I'm really turned on, I still want to go, give me your cock, sir. He has to say something, he has to get his breath enough to say something and re-consent before we go forward with that action again, because it's a dangerous action.
It is, and we're talking about lack of breath there, right? The potential for gagging and vomit.
It's the gagging and vomiting, because it's the same thing. Every time it comes, you know, when my cough comes out, I mean, his face is covered in spit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he's had a meal, he could be covered in puke. You got to be careful.
Absolutely.
He needs to be able to say out loud that he's okay enough to go forward every single time.
And by making sure that he can verbalize, you're actually making sure that physiologically he's okay, right? And that's really, really key when doing that kind of play. Now, if someone is getting whipped, right, the verbal might not be important in the same way, right? A nod, a thumbs up, like these kinds of things might work fine during a whipping scene, but, you know, certainly when you're gagging, right? You need to make sure that someone's still verbal. Thank you. So I know that you had a question. Do you remember what it was?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
What you were talking about, the non-consensual stuff and all that. If, say that you're not in a sexual scene whatsoever, not at a bar, not at nothing, and you're dressed in normal clothes, not kind of like what the hell I'm wearing, and someone walks up to you and starts coming on to you really strongly, and you tell them, no, this has happened to me twice, and they keep coming on to you. Now, I've only done this once. I told the guy 5 times no very clearly, and then he kept doing it. As soon as he did it, I knocked the hell out of him. Is that okay?
So, is it okay to react in a physically aggressive manner when someone is giving you unwanted sexual contact?
Can you talk about that? Were they physical with you?
Yeah, so he was running up to me, kissing me on my neck, grabbing my
ass. Well, I would do that as self-defense.
So, yes.
You made it verbally clear.
Yeah, so if someone has contacted your body, that's already assault, right? So it's gone from unwanted, like, sexual harassment to physical assault or sexual assault. And, yeah, at that point, you're defending yourself. Now, could the cops technically charge you with assault in return? Yeah, I mean, yes. Will they?
California, that there is no technical self-defense law. If you throw a punch back, you're both legally arrested.
You know, I don't know the answer to that question, whether there's technically...
In my apartment, both parties, one was being attacked by the other, and both were arrested because...
Both got physical.
The officer said, you know, at the time, who knows if it actually true, because I love saying
that. Was that a domestic dispute?
It was not domestic.
Okay.
It was not domestic. It happened during the drinking.
So I don't want to answer that question incorrectly. I don't know what the California laws are regarding, you know, whether that technically there's no self-defense law. What I will say is that most of the cops that I've talked to, because I interact with cops a lot for my work, they're not going to charge, you know, if you're defending yourself. Now, if they're unclear what's going on, some of them will, you know, sort of say, both of you. But more often what they're looking for, especially in domestic violence disputes, they're looking for the – there's the difference between the – oh, what are the words? There's primary aggressor, and then there's not secondary aggressor. Why can't I think of the word right now? It's slipping my mind. But basically there's the person who hit first – oh, the dominant aggressor. And then there's a dominant aggressor. Who has more power in the situation and who essentially is more dominant in the situation? And so they're going to go for the dominant aggressor, not the primary aggressor. So just because you push back first, let's say, even if someone hasn't touched you, doesn't necessarily mean that you're the dominant aggressor, right? So if someone, for example, is blocking your exit from a room and you push them to get out because that's your only way to get through the door... Just because you were the first person to lay hands on another person doesn't necessarily mean you'll get charged, right? Because they'll see the person who has the power in that situation as being the dominant aggressor.
It's kind of like when a wife slaps the husband slaps her back. He's physically, you know, more often than not more powerful than she is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily who's more powerful physically. It's in that relationship, in that particular dynamic, who has control? Who, you know, who's making the financial decisions? Who's making the rules in the house, right? So if she's slapping first because she has no power, either that's the only thing she has left to do, it doesn't necessarily mean she might be the primary, in that incident, the primary aggressor, but she is not necessarily the dominant aggressor. It's a little complicated, and I would, you know, it's best to refer to the cops for more of that information than to me. But what I will say is that defending yourself is almost always understood as, you know, I mean, actually, something happened to me just this week where I got groped at a bar by a woman who thought it was hilarious to, yeah, grope my ass, and I confronted her when she came back around. I was like, you know, if you need to get through, because it was crowded, it was at Red Wing, if you need to get through, I would really appreciate it if you didn't grab my ass. And she went and grabbed it again. And so I grabbed her hand and I pushed her off of me because I was like, I mean, it was so obvious what she was doing, and that was sexual assault. So it happens. It happens from perpetrators you do not expect. Perpetrators can absolutely be women. Perpetrators can be gay or straight or bisexual or queer. And really, it can be anybody, right? And so... Daniel Meyer, the officer that Gabriel mentioned, who's the LGBT liaison, is a really good contact if ever you're concerned about not being taken seriously if something has happened to you. So, yes?
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on Tommy's comment. You know, and I found myself in a similar situation, and, you know, it would have been really nice to slug the guy. But I think if there's other options to deal with the situation, it's preferable to, you know, yeah, you can tell them over and over, no, 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 and they persist. But if you can walk away, at the very least, I mean, I think that's just the mature thing to do. It's a responsible thing to do rather than hitting somebody. I don't think that's necessary in a situation like that. Now, if you can't get away, obviously, you got to hit them.
Well, I was walking down Balboa Park. Guy was kind of following.
That's bizarre. In that situation, I could totally see.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get to work. Yeah. When I was working at the Indigo Cafe, this black guy kept grabbing my ass and playing with my junk. Kept wanting to just go around the bushes. I'm like, dude, I've got to get to work. I've got to get to work.
Yeah.
I've got to get to work. Fuck off. And then after that, I just slugged the hell out of him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very, very clearly sexual assault. And very clearly, in my mind, you know, defense. Yeah. I mean, you were verbally very clear, right? And so even if you're not, and this is something that I want to kind of say again because it's important, is just because you don't say no loudly enough, often enough, doesn't mean that you're giving consent. And it doesn't mean that if something happens to you that it's your fault, that you didn't do enough. So that's important to kind of drive home. Other questions or thoughts before we close up? Yes?
I can think about a lot of assumptions. I assume all the time, I go home with somebody, they know exactly what I want. I don't have to talk to them.
How do they know exactly what you want?
Because my hands are telling them what I want.
Mm-hmm. So you've told them by already engaging in it.
Yes.
Okay? So you may have lucked out until now. What I would say is that it's a risky game you're playing there.
When I touch people, they know exactly what I want. There's no doubt what I want.
That's true.
At that point, it may already be sexual harassment.
Correct.
You may have already crossed somebody's boundaries.
When they're backing up into me, then they're saying yes.
So if they are engaging with you, if they're the ones who are moving, who are backing into your hand or whatever, then they are doing it. They're consenting by you know, pushing into you. If you're coming up to someone and grabbing someone or telling them with your hands, then it's possible that at that point it's already unwanted.
They can still change their mind after.
And they can change their mind.
It's kind of like the double-edged sword, in a way of speaking.
And tell me more about that double-edged sword.
Double-edged sword is, you know, some situations you'll win, but at the same time it can backfire and cut you.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, we all want to enjoy play. We all want to go to bars and have fun. We all want to, you know, be flirty and have a good time with people. And there's ways to do that where we can still be doing it consensually without kind of running that edge, right, with people who potentially, especially if it's people we don't know, right? Now, if it's someone you know really well, really, really well, I mean, yes, we can still make assumptions. We can still have miscommunication. But the chances that, you know, someone who you're already established, it's okay to come up and greet them with a smack on the ass or a grab or whatever, that may be fine. That might be in place. And for the most part, you're probably going to be okay with continuing to do that. You still want to be checking in and making sure. But you're probably okay. When it's people you don't know, how do you ever know if they want to be grabbed, unless if they're backing up into you and, you know, squirming around, or if they're saying, yeah, you know, obviously those are great signs of consent. But otherwise, you might not have it. Other thoughts? Yes?
You know, one of the things you kind of started out with in the beginning was, like, some of the stuff that's going on around in the bars or something, I guess. And I remember it was last March or April, I woke up on a Saturday morning at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I went, gosh, I don't have a hangover. And I started getting up and collecting my stuff, and I found my keys, and I found my phone, and I was looking for my wallet. So I'm looking around down the floor, I see somebody else's belt is on my floor. I'm like, what the fuck? I never found my wallet. I immediately went and checked, and they'd been using all three of my credit cards. And this was at a bar that I my good friends call it my living room, because I can go in there by myself or whatever. I know the owners. I know all the bartenders. I go back and I'll bust glasses for them when it gets busy. And I went back the next day and I said, when I left, did I look drunk or do you know who I was with? They said, we never saw you leave with anybody. We didn't notice you getting drunk. And they watch out for people that they know. And the reason that is so scary for me is because about 8 or 9 years ago, I met a guy in Florida. We had sex. A couple of years later, I went back and had sex with him again. He was a big brother in the Big Brothers Big Sisters Club. He was very active in the gay community. And a couple of years later, I found out that he is now in prison for, he would give people, I guess it was G, the date rape drug, and bring him back to his house, tie him up, have sex with him, and chop him up. And he is in prison. His name is Steve Lorenzo, if you want to go, like, Google it, because the story is bizarre. And he chopped people up and put them in, like, 6 different bags and would take them to places around Tampa Bay. And he didn't get caught for killing people. The DEA was tracking him for all of his drug sales. And he had printed out all of his conversations with this guy from Chicago where they were talking about how they were going to get the next person, you know, pull the next person out of the bar, find the next person that's just standing there by themselves, and drug them and all that stuff. So, you know, when I woke up this last year on a Saturday and went, oh my God, that could have been me again. And thank God it wasn't. But I just try to be really careful, because I thought I knew this guy, Steve, pretty well. We'd spent 6 to 8 months online, by phone. I knew what is, you know, what he wanted in life, his goals and all of that, and he's in prison for killing 3 people, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you for feeling comfortable to share that. I'm sorry that it happened recently to you, and I'm sorry that you have had this history with him. You know, it is frightening, right? And we are hearing people being willing to talk now about something that we know has been going on for a very long time, which is people getting drugged at bars. And oftentimes people do not have hangovers when it's G or something like that, right? And so there might not be any indication. There might be memory loss, like a big blank spot in one's memory. And yes, you know, and sometimes folks are waking up and realizing that they've been raped, sexually assaulted, and certainly had their wallet stolen or something else, right? So,
or worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's frightening. And so, you know, while of course we want to be looking out for ourselves and our friends, and that's, you know, it's scary to think that this could happen to us. It's not your fault that it happened to you. No amount of, you know, checking someone's background and, you know, trying to make sure that they're safe and making sure that your friends know who he is, no amount of what you could have done would necessarily have prevented it. And I know that that's scary, you know, to think that we don't have control over this. We only have control over what we're doing and making sure that we're educating each other, that we're talking about it, and that we're really being responsible if we are out there to be good bystanders, right? So we talk about, in prevention, we talk about bystander intervention. Does anybody know what that is? Bystander intervention.
The person around the incident happening, stepping up and doing something about it.
Yeah, so stepping up if you see something hinky going on, right? Now, it gets tricky, right? Because if a scene is unfolding that's been negotiated, you don't want to interrupt a scene. That's no good, right? That's actually, you know, a big no-no. So what we do want to do is make sure that maybe we're checking in with a DM, a dungeon monitor. Maybe we're checking in with whoever the host of the party is. Maybe if it is at a club or a bar, we're talking to security, the bouncer, the club owner, right? I saw something, and something about it seemed off to me. Would you check? Would you make sure? Is that okay? Maybe if we are friends with someone, hey, buddy, what's up? How are you? I haven't seen you in a while. And try to disengage the person, distract them, right? Or check in with the person who we think is the victim and say, hey, how you doing, right? But we just want to be doing it in a mindful way. If it is a scene, we don't want to interrupt that, unless it's a DM who has the authority to do it, right?
Could you define what a DM is?
a dungeon monitor, so somebody who is responsible, who has the authority within a dungeon or play space or a play party to go and make sure rules are being enforced, including maybe if there's a no photography rule or if there's, you know, a no blood play rule or if they see... I'm sorry, say that again?
No breath
play, for example, or if they see something that looks like it hasn't been, you know, negotiated, or if someone is calling what they think might be a safe word. Of course, a lot of times red might be a universal safe word at a play party, right? But if not, if someone is saying a word repeatedly and it doesn't sound like a no, no, daddy, don't, right? And it sounds like toast or, you know, refrigerator or something like that, and you're like, that seems off to me, right? Let's see what that's about. Is that a safe word? Okay. So, other thoughts or questions before we close up? Yeah.
I just wanted to. I didn't catch your name.
Me?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I go to a lot of the fairy events and stuff like that. If anything, like, if you please feel free to.
No, I feel totally comfortable, you know, asserting my boundaries. It's just I have a problem with the assumption already being there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you ever had problems at some event like that.
No, a lot of it was welcome, but then there's those moments where it's not, you know.
Yeah, you know, actually, thank you
it's,
for
it's
saying
about
that.
The problem is the assumption that I am already consenting when people are assuming my consent for me when they haven't even given me a chance to physically give it, verbally give it with my eyes, I don't know, my hands, something.
Yeah, when it's the coming up to you from behind without making any kind of eye contact and just grabbing, right, and you don't even know the person, and right, it's like, where's the opportunity to even somehow indicate that it's wanted? Were you going to add to that?
Well, I was just going to add on to that. I mean, you know, it's I think, you know, we are all adults. We have the ability to, you know, establish our boundaries, and within that context, and provided you're giving some signal that you're welcoming advances, or vice versa, you know, it can all be negotiated openly and you know, fairly without, you know, it arising to the level of harassment, legal harassment, and so on. I don't, you know, it's unnecessary in our situation to go there, I think, generally. That's my perspective.
And yet it happens, right? It's unnecessary, but it does happen.
Well, I mean, even happening, you know, we can still set our boundaries, and you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes.
I know that I've been talking real bold and all of that, but there's another thing that I want to add. Being the biggest guy in the bar, perhaps other people can back me up on this. If some drunk wants to pick a fight or assault the biggest guy in the bar, it's always me. I've been bitten hard enough to bleed. Mm-hmm. I don't dare go shirtless in a bar because I'm just the right height for some drunk to lean over and do the pliers with his teeth on my nipple. That's happened more times than I can count. I have been punched as hard as somebody can do it in the ass. And I turn around, God damn, what do you do that for? So I thought you'd like it, man. You're in leather. Mm. You know, and, you know, I get a lot of, I mean, I used to. Lately, not lately. You know, but I mean, back in the days when I could be a stranger in a bar, which doesn't happen anymore, but drunken strangers would physically assault me. It's happened probably at least 50 times. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not sexual assault. I mean, for me personally, if somebody comes up and grabs my ass, I call that audience participation.
And those are your limits. So for you, that's perfectly okay. It's not assault. You know, pliers on your nipples, that's assault, right? So that's an important thing to remember. We were talking about, it's not necessarily the smallest guy or the weakest guy or the, you know, the most feminine presenting guy. You know, people are getting assaulted who are bigger, stronger, taller. Thank you.
Everybody wants to pick me up and crush my ribs while they're doing it, whether I want them to or not. Yeah.
Thank you.
I just even try to do that.
It's people like a challenge, right? Other thoughts? So, where does that leave us? What do you take? What's that?
Let's go to the bar.
Let's go to the bar. Yeah, hey. So, if anyone feels like they'd like to offer this, what do you take away from today? What's one thing going forward that you feel like you know better or that you're going to do differently?
Well, you need the napkin, write down the stuff that you are negotiating so you have a reminder when you forget.
That's a cool idea. So that bar napkin.
Every phone has a notes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Put it in a note.
Well, it's the idea of having something to remind you of.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, right? We can our cell phones are pretty much glued to us, most of us anyway, right? So use them, right? Somebody else said communication.
Mm-hmm. That's why God is to really talk about it beforehand, negotiate, figure out what's going to happen. I think that's awfully hard to do sometimes, but it's obviously it'll probably make the whole thing work out a lot better.
You know what? What I always tell, especially new people who think that negotiation is unsexy, is that consent is hot. Consent is so hot. Negotiation is hot. I get off half the time on just the negotiation part of it because I'm all worked up. It's like foreplay to me. It's like, oh, you're going to do that, and then you're going to do this, and it's going to be awesome, right? So let it be hot. Let it be exciting, and let it be consensual and communicate. Yeah.
Probably the best way to get somebody's consent is to make them beg for it.
Make them beg for it. Please give it to me. Please. Love it. So if you like a little begging, if you like people on their knees... Consent is for you.
That's the trick of a good talk. I always like to make them always.
Always.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Okay. Other things you might take away from today? Anything else? Yes.
What we think is not necessarily what the law actually is.
Yes. So our community, it's really important to remember that the practices that we have and the community rules that we live by, safer, saner, always consensual... The law doesn't always see it that way, so we have to know that and understand what the legal ramifications are and then really be playing with that knowledge. That's part of what SSC really is. You know, we can't be playing sanely if we don't know that technically all of this is illegal. All right? That's informed consent. Say that again.
It's more RAC.
It's risk-aware consensual kink, right? So we're aware of the risk, but, we're taking it. And we're all adults. If we're all 18, we're all adults. We can all consent to that, but we have to know that. Thank you. Other thoughts? All right. Thank you. Have an awesome night.